First of all, I'd like all the children from about 4 to 10 come up here. So, we have a light here. This is a bright flashlight. This is kind of like we are here. It shines and it works really good. It's a nice flashlight. So let's say this is a person that is not distracted with anything, but he's got a bright. If we go down through here, you want to put a tape, you can put it anywhere on this thing that you can. Anywhere. This person here, he's got something that's added to his life. Well, let's put it anywhere on there. Okay, so now we have, the light was just a little bit of an illustration there, sometimes how we can be when we are in, we go through life sometimes and we can get distracted a little bit. There's a verse in Philippians 2:15 that says, that you may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, In the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. This man here, or this flashlight here, wasn't really, the light got dim because of attracting things around, the sticky things in its life seemed to focus directly on the light portion of this light. I'd like for you to open your Bibles to Luke 12 and verse 15. I'd like to open with some words of Jesus here. And the title for the message here is called Coveting the Dream. It's Coveting the Dream. So the words of Jesus I'd like to open with, it says, "Man, who made me a judge or a divider over you? Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth." And the reason he said these words, there was a man that came to him and says, "Master, go talk to my brother and have him divide the inheritance with me." Now, why did he want the inheritance? Probably for the same reason that we'd want the inheritance. Maybe it's sentimental values for dad's things or mom's things. Or maybe it's, maybe dad was wealthy and we worked hard all our life and we don't have anything and we're just waiting for this break and we just can't bear if sibling gets all the things or more than I do. But whatever it was, I don't know who the man was or what the scenario was. He just wanted the inheritance. And Jesus didn't want to be the judge or the make any judgment calls on that thing. But he did use it as a teachable moment. And I'd like to take these words and get some thoughts here as a teachable moment for us, for me especially, because this is something that I can see in my own life very much, and that is a desire to acquire. The desire to acquire. Jesus says, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth." Throughout history, man has been fascinated by things and the acquisition of more of those things. Success has been and still is measured by one's net worth, social status, or intellectual achievement. So you don't have to be rich to be covetous, to covet. It can be in how much education I have. I can covet fame or social status, or I can covet being more important than you. I can covet being somebody that has arrived or has achieved something. We naturally tend to measure our success and self-worth by the things that we currently have and or the things which we hope someday to have. If our success and self-worth is measured by acquiring things and increasing net worth, then where does contentment fit in? Because if we are valued based on what we have or who we are or how much we know, where does being satisfied with what we have come in? And how do we fulfill the command to seek first the kingdom of God? I don't know what you think of when you think of the word covetousness or what it means. But why is covetousness listed as a sin, and what's wrong with it? Why is it listed right along with all kinds of major moral sins, we call major moral sins, It's also called idolatry. But is all covetousness wrong? Is all covetousness wrong? What constitutes coveting? Is it something visible that others can see? Is it a fruit of my life that others can look into my life and say, okay, you're covetous in area A, but you're fine in all the rest? It can be. I mean, my actions can show what it is. Is it strictly an internal? Is my covetousness strictly internal, or is it visible to others? Is it only a heart matter? And is it always wrong? I alluded to that earlier. Does it make a difference what we are coveting? As men, we have a strong desire to succeed in life. None of us wants to be a failure. We want to be fulfilled and happy. Our society measures our success by possessions, achievements, or fame. God measures success by brokenness. How much we are willing to give up our own desires and be yielded to Him. That's how God measures success. It's exactly backwards from how the world measures it. But which metric are we following? Which one do we want to follow? If we know where we are, and it's different than where we want to be, when would be a good time to correct our course? Our heart, the condition of our heart, is something that we need to look at ourselves, each one of us. Look inside and see. And this burden was developed from my own heart. It's something that I look in my own heart and see. I came across a couple verses last week. Psalm 119, 36 and 37 kind of got me started on this. And then I had my devotional was in some other passages later on, but it all seemed to kind of point to this one thing. And it seemed like God was working to show me area in my life that I need to work on. Psalm 119:36 says, "Incline my heart unto thy testimonies, and not to covetousness. Turn away mine eyes from beholding vanity, and quicken thou me in thy way," or "make me alive in your way." Turn my eyes away from beholding vain things, and make me alive in your way. I want to read Luke 12. We'll start in verse 13 and we'll read through verse 21. It's the rest of the story of what Jesus was talking about here to the people that were around this man that asked him to divide the inheritance. Luke 12:13 says, "And one of the company said unto him, Master, speak to my brother that he divide the inheritance with me. And he said to him, Man, who made me a judge or a divider over you? And he said unto them," those around him, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, What shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, This will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. And then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." This man was using the world's metric for success. He had the best fertilizer for his farm. He had the best seed. He had the best people working for him. He had the best equipment to harvest his crop. He did everything right, and his farm yielded tremendous. God blessed the crop, and his farm was yielded more than what he had space to store it. And so he said, I'm going to retire early. I'll have enough money from this crop that I can rebuild all my storage facility, and we'll put it in here, and I can sell it and live off the interest for many years. And we'll just retire and we'll be good. And so he did that, or he set out to do that, and he made the plans to do that. And he had poured his life into his farm, into his business there. But he did not take into account anything beyond the eat, drink, and be merry part of it. And so he was rich in goods. He had more than he could store, but he had nothing in his soul or for his soul to carry him through after he was gone. And God was trying to, well, Jesus was telling this story to show the futility of us doing the same thing. So what does covetous mean? Or what does covetousness mean? What does covet mean? Does it mean the same thing every time it's used in the Bible? I looked it up here. Covet, the word covet in the King James Version, is found 8 times. Coveteth, which is a form of coveting on an ongoing basis. Coveteth is found twice. Coveted, in the past tense, is found 3 times. But how are these words used in the Bible? And do they mean the same thing every time? So I looked it up. I don't know if we have time for all of it or not. But there are 5 Greek words that are translated covet or covetous or coveted in the New Testament. And they all, those forms of it, kind of use the same Greek word. I'm going to write those Greek words up here on the board just so you can see it, and then I'll go over some of them because they do mean different things. And there's different definitions for some of the words that are used that are translated covet. And there's some words in the Bible that are the same word that are not called, they're not translated covet. So I'll write these up here now. And the first one is epithumeo. And it basically means to set the heart upon. Number 2 is zaleo. And it simply means zealous desire. And this can be good or bad. And related to this word zaleo is another word called oregomai. And it means stretching forth or all out effort. Thank you. if y'all can see that or not, but we'll try here. And then the last two are somewhat related. Pleonexia and pleonectes or something. Pleonexia would simply be a greedy desire. Also have the note of love of money. And pleonectes simply means the same thing. It's or very similar there. So the first one, epithumeo, the word that's translated covet in some things, but mostly it's translated as lust, desire, or would fain. And some references to that would be Matthew 5:28, where it says, "Whoso looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart." That word lust there is the same word, epithumeo, which is translated covet. That's one translation of covet. Also in Luke 15:16, in the prodigal son, when he was out working for the farmer and he desired to have the husks of the corn or husks that the pigs ate, that's also the same word. When Lazarus was desiring to be fed with the crumbs, it's the same thing. It's a desire for something. You set your heart upon that thing. And then also in Romans 7:7, Paul says, "I had not known sin except the law had said, thou shalt not covet." It was in the same context as adultery there, thou shalt not, or not known lust except the law had said, thou shalt not covet. That word covet there is the same word. Okay, so is coveting always bad? Well, our English Bible translates the word, the same English word, but sometimes it has a little different definition. In 1 Corinthians 12:31, it says, "Covet earnestly the best gifts." And that's the word zeloo. And it simply means a zealous desire. So desire earnestly the best gifts. Now, it can also be, it's translated moved with envy as well. It creates a warm feeling. It's a warm, like a hot burning zeal in your heart. Joseph's brothers had the same burning zeal to get rid of Joseph, which was translated as envy. They were moved with envy. But it is used when it says desire the best gifts, it's translated as covet earnestly the best gifts. That's used in a good sense there. 1 Corinthians 14:39 is another one where, I'll just turn to that one real quick. 1 Corinthians 14:39, it says, "Brethren, covet to prophesy and forbid not to speak with tongues." And also 14:1 says, "Follow after charity and desire spiritual gifts." So those are the same words that are translated covet also. The one that's also related to that, eregomai. The third one, the stretching forth or an all-out effort. That's three times in the New Testament that word is used, but only one time is it translated covet or coveted. And that's in 1 Timothy 6:10. And we know that verse. It says, "For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some having coveted after, have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows." That word coveted there is the thought of an all-out desire, an all-stretching forth. It's an all-consuming passion. And sometimes people that do an all-consuming passion for one thing, it's a stretched forth thing, even if that particular pursuit is okay or is good in and of itself, if it consumes their whole desire to go all out after it and it chokes out the spiritual life that they have, it will cause them to err from the faith. And that's what Timothy is talking about there in where it says, while some having coveted have gone after, that they have just let the pursuit of the cares of this life crowd out the other more lasting eternal life. And then also in 1 Timothy 3:1 and Hebrews 11:6, it's using the same word. It's an all-out effort, but it's more in a positive sense. Well, 1 Timothy 3:1 says, "Whoso desireth the office of a bishop desireth the good work." It's the same word, that word desire. And then Hebrews 11:6, I don't know what that one is. I'll have to look at that here. Hebrews 11:6 is, "Without faith it is impossible to please him, for he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him." And so, that word is translated covet only one time, but it simply means an all-out desire. And then the last two, pleonexia and pleonectes, that's translated covetousness or coveting or something like that. That's two things. But basically, that's what we normally think of when we think of coveting or covetousness. It's a greedy desire to have more. And that's the form that is used here in Luke 12:15, where it says, "Beware of covetousness. Beware of a greedy desire to have more, to acquire, to get, and to have." In Mark 7:22, that's a reference that's also used. Romans 1:29. 2 Corinthians 9:5, Ephesians 5:3, Colossians 3:5. There's quite a few references there. Colossians 3:5 calls this form of covetousness idolatry. In Ephesians 4:19, it's translated as greediness instead of covetousness. I would like to read Colossians 3:5 here and point that out. You can turn to that if you can. Colossians 3:5. It says, "Mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, which is idolatry." And then Ephesians 4:19, it's translated as greediness. And it says there, "Who being past feeling have given themselves over unto lasciviousness to work all uncleanness with greediness." With that greedy desire to have more. And then related to this pleonectes is a desire for more, eager for gain, love of money. And it's translated as covetous also. In the Old Testament, there are three Hebrew words translated as covet, and they basically mean the same thing. But in the Ten Commandments, in Exodus 20, verse 17, there's a word called kamar. Kamad, I think is how they pronounced it. And that simply is to delight in, to delight in beauty, something that's highly esteemed or desirable property. And that's translated covet, but it's also translated a lot of other different ways too. But that, in Exodus 20:17, where it says, "Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, his wife, his ox, and his animals," whatever, then it's talking that that desire for beautiful things or highly esteemed or desirable property, that type of thing. It's also what Achan, the word Achan would have used, or that is recorded as Achan using, when he coveted the Babylonish garment, the gold and the silver that he took in from Jericho. And that's in Joshua 7:21, and then Micah 2:2, it talks about the rulers of the land coveting the desirable fields and taking it by force. A stronger form of coveting here is the word avah, which means to greatly desire, to lust after, to exceedingly long for. That's a stronger form of it. And in the New Testament, that would have been translated as lust straight across. And it's translated as lust primarily in the Old Testament also. But it was a form of coveting that was stronger than the first one there. Then betzah is another form or another Hebrew word there, and that simply means to profit by dishonest gain or gain acquired by violence. And some of these Hebrew words interchange with the Greek ones too, but I'm just pointing that out simply because there's different forms of the word covet, even though it's not used specifically in the Bible. The idea is prevalent throughout, but it's not always called by the same name there. So how does covetousness affect our lives today? The form that's used in Luke 12:15 is a self-focused form of achievement and fulfillment in life. It's a self-focused form of achievement and fulfillment in life. It's primarily concerned with my well-being, with my advancement and comfort. It's a lifestyle that puts self front and center in focus, and life's decisions are based off of what would benefit me. Colossians 3:5 calls this form of covetousness idolatry, and rightly so. Covetousness is a heart issue. Sometimes it's evident to those around us, but sometimes no one else can see it. We need to examine our motives for doing what we do. And I say this to myself. I need to examine my motives for doing what I do. Do I acquire things for utility purposes because I genuinely need it? Or do I acquire things to fill a void in my life? Or to increase my status and position relative to those around me? Do I buy things for a status symbol to elevate my value or my self-worth? Is my self-worth tied with what I have, with my net worth or my things? What about the admonition in 1 Timothy 6, verse 10, where it says, "For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows." And the form of coveted, the word form that's used here is oregamai, which I already talked about. It's an all-out effort. It's a stretching or a reaching for. Sometimes our desire to be successful, especially when maybe starting a new business, that takes a lot of effort. Or just the day-to-day activities and making a living can be an all-out effort that consumes all of our energy and time. It crowds out time that we take with God, that we have with God. It takes all our energy and leaves nothing left over for God. The attitude of covetousness, like we mentioned earlier, is a self-focused activity. Of course, making a living is necessary. It's right to do that. But let's focus on keeping our work to pay our way through life and not to use our occupation or business to be the measure of our self-worth or success in life. In 1 Timothy, it says, "Godliness with contentment is great gain." Contentment is the antidote for a covetous spirit. First of all, it takes a brokenness and a yieldedness before God to be able to be content. Without a driving desire to be better than those around us or to have our self-worth tied up in our things, we can be content without that desire. If our life is self-focused, it's almost impossible to be content. I'd like to leave a challenge with us to closely examine our hearts and ask God to cleanse us from any form of covetous or idolatry that we find there. I want to close with the words of Jesus in Matthew 6:30.